Want to zero in again on the very beginning of the parasha, the Ve'ele Mishpatim, these are the Mishpatim, these are the laws, Asher Tosim Lifneihem, that you are to place before them. Moshe, Hashem is speaking to Moshe and telling him, present these Mishpatim to the Jewish people. And this is right after Har Sinai, the previous parasha, Parasha Zisra. So Rashi says, Asher Tosim Lifneihem, that you shall place before them, Amalo HaKadosh Baruch Hu LeMoshe. Hashem said to Moshe, Lo talal daitocha lomar, don't let it arise in your mind to say, Eshda lehem a perek v'halacha shtayim v'shalash pa'amim. I'll teach them a chapter, a halacha, two or three times, achete sudur b'fihem, until it's organized in their mouths, k'mishnasa, according to how you've taught it to me. But I'm not going to bother myself and go to the expenditure of teaching them and helping them to understand the reasons of each particular topic. Meaning to say that Hashem is saying to Moshe, don't let it arise in your mind that you should only teach these laws in a superficial way, two or three times, without explaining the reasons and the underlying rationale behind these laws. Don't let it arise in your mind to say that. No, Asher Tosim Lifneihem. That's why it says, put them before them. Put the laws before them, k'shulchan aruch, like a shulchan aruch, like a table, which is nicely set, umuchan, and prepared, ready, lechol lifnei adam, to eat before the person sitting there. So, sounds like what Hashem is saying to Moshe is, don't let it arise in your mind, only teach these laws superficially. Don't think to teach them superficially two or three times, making sure that they, you know, understand the basic ideas of these laws. Don't do that. I want you to teach these laws thoroughly and explain the reasons and the meaning behind these laws as well. It's very strange. Hey, why would Moshe consider teaching these laws superficially? Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe is our teacher. He taught Torah to Klal Yisrael. His whole life was dedicated to the dissemination of Torah to make sure that the Jewish people were versed in Torah, in all the halachas, and all the mitzvahs, to teach them to their children, their descendants after them. I mean, he is the source. He's the origin of our Torah from Hashem. So does it make sense that Moshe should have a consideration to teach these laws superficially? Like, it's like saying, it's like you go into a class, like coming to one of my classes and then coming in and wondering, am I going to teach this superficially? Or am I going to teach this in detail? Well, you know, I like to teach things in detail to explain thoroughly. So why would Moshe have a consideration to only teach these laws superficially? It's ridiculous that Hashem needs to tell him, don't teach them superficially. Don't consider just giving like an overview, a cursory overview of these laws. No, make sure to teach them properly. Teach them the reasons behind the mitzvahs, behind the laws, give them the explanations, give them the understanding. Don't do it superficially. Don't do it superficially, Hashem said to Moshe. It's a very strange thing. Why would Moshe think to do it superficially? Why would he think to do it superficially? That Hashem needs to tell him, don't teach it superficially. This is the question the Sfas Emes asks, and he discusses this in multiple places in this week's parasha. It's actually, he repeats this several times, explaining it in different ways. But I'll read to you one part of it, and it's really a very, very fundamental idea, and it explains why Moshe would consider teaching these laws superficially. The reason is because he's afraid that the Jewish people would misunderstand and misconstrue the true meaning of the ideas. And the reason for this is because, you know, an idea which we're well familiar with, discussed many times before, and that is, the more you explain reasons behind things, what happens? When you start explaining reasons, you know, in children, it's very true with children. If you give an instruction to a child, right, a young kid, a five-year-old kid, a six-year-old kid wants to go outside and play, and you say, you have to come in by a certain time. And the reason is because of X, Y, or Z, right? That's a big no-no. Don't give reasons to kids. Because if you give them reasons, so they'll rationalize a reason why they shouldn't do it. So there's always a danger of explaining reasons behind things. right? Because ultimately, you want the children to observe the law, to observe the rules. And Hashem wants us to observe the rules. He wants us to keep the mitzvahs. As soon as you start delving into the reasons behind mitzvahs, it's a slippery slope. And it can lead people astray to start rationalizing for themselves. You know, we've learned about this in our Navi class on Wednesday nights with Shlomo HaMelech. This was something which Shlomo HaMelech stumbled in when he sought reasons for the prohibition against having too many wives, about having too much gold and silver and having too many horses. He sought the rationale behind, and the fact that Gemara says that's the reason why so many reasons for mitzvahs are not given in the Torah. Not that there's no reasons there, but that's what the commentaries delve into, the reasons. But there's a danger in going into those reasons, because once you give reasons, then you can start rationalizing why this reason doesn't apply to me. So the danger of giving reasons is it could lead people astray. And the goal of mitzvahs and the goal of the Torah is that we should be observant. We should be obedient and follow the mitzvahs. So that stands to reason that now what Moshe is starting, so to speak, his career, because really this parasha is the beginning of his teaching career for Klal Yisrael. The Torah was delivered to the Jewish people in the last week's parasha, Revelation at Sinai, Ten Commandments, right? But the mitzvahs had not yet been taught to the Jewish people. So now Moshe is starting the career of teaching Torah to Klal Yisrael. Now he's a tremendously faithful servant of Hashem, and he wants us to be faithful servants to him as well. And what is servant? What is service? What's faithful service? Faithful service is following the rules and following the mitzvahs and serving Hashem. And the danger of explaining too much and going into too much detail and giving the reasons behind things, the reasons behind mitzvahs, why we do this and why we don't do this, the danger necessarily is that it gives like an opportunity for a person to make a rationalization that this reason doesn't apply to me. So Sfas Emes says that the rationale, the thinking that Moshe may have had to not explain the mitzvahs in their full detail was in order to facilitate a greater adherence and a greater commitment to the performance of these mitzvahs without putting one's own rationale and reasoning and arguments into the mitzvahs, or arguments why not to keep these reasons or keep these mitzvahs because maybe the reason doesn't apply to me. So this is what the Sfas Emes says, right? And it's especially true in the area of Mishpatim. This concept is especially true in the area of Mishpatim, because Mishpatim are the rational laws. See, they're the rational laws, as I said before. They're the laws which logic dictates. And if logic dictates it, so logic will dictate my way of interpreting it and my way of deviating from things which aren't convenient for me, which I want to now deviate from. In other words, when it comes to religious mitzvahs, chukim, and mitzvahs which are clearly founded upon spiritual ideas, so then even if I give you a reason and an explanation as to why we do it, you know, and you have a reason why, you may have an argument against it, you know, at the end of the day, you can chalk it up. It's a religious mitzvah. It's some kind of religious duty I have to do. But when it comes to mishpatim, when it comes to social laws and laws of justice and laws of social laws, where they're logical anyway, so the more reasons you give, the more explanation you give, it gives a person room and license to now reinterpret and apply and apply their own human intellect and their own human understanding to understand the law and how that law should be applied and not be applied, and then ignore the halacha, essentially, ignore what the halacha says. And this is very, very wrong. This is very, very wrong, because a major, major idea, which also comes out of the parasha, which I'll show in a second, is that mishpatim, even the civil laws, even the laws of social justice, and even the laws, all of the concepts of ethics and law and laws of interpersonal relationships, the klal is, the rule is, they also come from Hashem. They're also religious at their very core. We tend to look at mishpatim as just being laws of social laws, laws which every society and every government and every legal system construes for themselves. But that's not how the Torah views mishpatim. Mishpatim are also from Hashem. They have to be viewed in the same way as the chukim are looked at, as religious, as concepts which may not necessarily have any logical sense, but they are religious, they are from Hashem. Mitzvahs are from Hashem. Mishpatim are also from Hashem. And this is why Rashi explains, he explains the reason why the parasha begins with the word ve'ela, ve'ela. Ve'ela means, and these are mishpatim, these are the mishpatim that you're supposed to teach the Jewish people. And the obvious grammatical question you could ask on the very first pasuk is, you don't start a sentence with end, right? You don't say, and these are the laws that you're supposed to teach the Jewish people, and these are the laws. You don't start a sentence, let alone a paragraph. So the question is, why does the parasha begin with the word and? And Rashi says right away, he says, the word and means as follows. He says, Ma harishonin, Messinai, for just as the earlier ones, the earlier ideas which were discussed in the previous parasha, and the Ten Commandments and Shabbos and honoring parents and belief in Hashem and not to keep worship of Avodah Zarah, idolatry, just as all of those laws were from Sinai, Af Eilu Sinai, even these laws are also from Sinai. Even the Mishpatim are also from Sinai as well. Even though they may seem to be just logical laws that any judicial system should construe for themselves, we're not supposed to look at it that way. We're supposed to look at the Mishpatim as also being emanating from Sinai, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that's the reason why it says, the Vav at the beginning, V'ela, and these are the laws, because just as those previously aforementioned ideas are from Sinai, these are all from Sinai. There's a tremendous message which is being conveyed, that don't look at Mishpatim as civil law and social laws as being things which are, humanly developed ideas and humanly developed laws, but they're from Sinai as well, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu as well. And because they lend themselves, because these, precisely for this reason, it lends itself for the human mind to then figure out for himself when these laws should apply, when they shouldn't apply, and to write God out of the picture. This is the reason why Moshe was reluctant to give a lot of explanation to these laws, particularly with these laws, because he wanted to impress upon the Jewish people that just like the other laws, the religious laws are from Sinai, from Hashem, these laws are also from Hashem as well. And the more explanation, the more details, the more reason and rationales you give to them, so the more danger there is that people are going to then, apply their own rationale and say, well, this reason doesn't apply to me. And that's the reason why. And what emerges from this, so to speak, Hava Amina, the thought that Moshe had in not giving a lot of detail to these laws, he was trying to impress upon them the same idea as Nasa V'Nishma. Nasa V'Nishma, which happens to be at the end of the parasha, we'll get to that in a few minutes. Nasa V'Nishma, which everyone knows, is in chapter 24, verse 7 of Exodus, right? Nasa V'Nishma, we'll do and we'll listen at the end of the portion. This is a little bit similar to that, because Moshe wants to convey and to remind the Jewish people and to impress upon them this great principle. Don't put your own minds before the observance of the mitzvahs. Put the mitzvahs before your mind. Make adherence to mitzvahs first and foremost. That should be the first thing. Nasa, benishma, then I'll learn afterwards. Then I'll understand the reasons afterwards. First do, and then learn afterwards. But do first. In fact, the Chiddush Arim says that this is also alluded to in the first verse as well. It says, Eila mishpat mashat tosim lifnehem. These are the laws that you should put lifnehem in front of them. So Rashi, as I quoted earlier, says, put them in front of them, put these laws in front of them, make it clear to them. But the Chiddush Arim says, put these laws in front of them, meaning to say, the laws have to precede them. The law has to precede me. I have to put my ego and myself behind the law, not in front of the law. It's when we put the ich, the I, the self, the ego, and what I want, what I think, what I make sense, what I think is logical, we put that before the law, that's it. That's the end of Judaism. Right? That is the end of Judaism. The end of Judaism is when I put myself in front of the law. No, I have to follow the law. The law has to be in front of me. These are the mishpatim which are lifneihem, in front. The word lifneihem means physically in front of them. But it's me, you know, it's what I want to do. It's what I think makes sense, what's logical to me. When I put that in front of the law, then the law disappears. The law gets distorted. The law gets all misconstrued, and the law gets misapplied and disappears completely. I've got to put myself behind the law. The law has to be in front of me. The mishpatim has to stand in front of me, lifneihem, before me. So this idea is especially necessary in this parasha. You see, you know, the question is, why is this message, why does this message emanate over here? The answer is because in the realm of mishpatim specifically, because they're so logical, and because they're so rational to human intellect, and it's what other jurisdictions create as well, it's precisely there that we have to know that these are also not of human constructions. They're not human, they're not the construction of a human mind. They're from Hashem as well. The truth is, as I saw in a sefer this week, it says that the Zohar says, "Istakel baraisa v'bari alma." Hashem, the Zohar says that Hashem looked into the Torah to create the world. Right? That's we know that idea. Hashem looked into the world. The Torah is the blueprint for creation. The Torah is the blueprint for the whole creation of the universe. Hashem looked into the Torah to create the universe. So if the Torah has mishpatim in it, so then Hashem looked into these mishpatim to create the world. So think about that for a second. It's an interesting thing. Creating the world and creating situations and creating relationships and creating all sorts of circumstances in the world is what he created from looking into the Torah. So these laws, perforce, are from Hashem because he looked at these laws to create the world. The secular mind looks at it that we have the world and now we're going to create laws around that situation. Person has a fight, there's an argument, there's some kind of dispute about a monetary situation. So now we're going to create a law to be able to bring peace and harmony between the parties. That's how the secular mind looks at it. The Torah doesn't look at it that way. We don't look at it that way. No, the law itself was what Hashem looked at to create those situations. It's an abstract idea, but I think you get the idea. Hashem looked into the Torah, so to speak, to create the universe, to create the world, to create all that we have and all of these dynamics and all these social interactions and social situations. They come afterwards. The law precedes it. What's the law? The law is the Devar Hashem. The law is the word of Hashem. The law is the word of Hashem, which is here in the parasha, even about the laws of social laws and jurisprudence. These are the laws which are also from Hashem, which Hashem then looked at to create the world. And this is a major, major idea. It's again part of the our education and our development of our relationship to Torah and to Hashem is to understand everything. Everything is from Hashem. This is also the in Pirkei Avos. Another like Pirkei Avos is the Mishnah, which is also about ethics and good behavior and good midos. Pirkei Avos. Pirkei Avos is not the first Masechta. Not the first tractate of Mishnah in the orders of Mishnah. It's not the very first one. Brachos is the first one. You know, Pirkei Avos actually really appears. It's the very last tractate of Mishnah in the order of what's called Nezikin. And Nezikin is damages, and that order, in fact, actually is the fourth order of the Mishnah. The fourth order, so very far along. And Pirkei Avos is the very last mission, the very last tractate in the order of Nezikin. So it's very far along in the whole sequence of the tractates of the Mishnah. So why am I saying that? The reason is because, again, Pirkei Avos is all about ethics and good conduct and good midos. And Pirkei Avos begins with the following statement: Moshe kibel Torah miSinai. Moshe received the Torah from Sinai and gave it over to the elders, gave it over to Yoshua. Yoshua gave it over to the elders. And the very, very first paragraph of Pirkei Avos delineates the chain of transmission of where Torah comes from, right? Which is not about midos and good ethics and good conduct. It's a chain of, it's telling us the history of the oral tradition. Moshe received the Torah from Sinai, gave it to Joshua, handed it over to Yoshua. Yoshua gave it over to the elders, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So why does Pirkei Avos start off with a history lesson? and a history lesson as to where the Torah comes from. And if he wants to give us a history lesson as to where the Torah comes from, so put it at the very beginning of the entire tractates of Mishnah. As I said, you know, Pirkei Avos comes much later on in the orders of Mishnah. So give us this history lesson, the origin of the Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral tradition. Present that at the very beginning of the orders of Mishnah, the beginning of Brachos. So the answer is, the Bartanura says, commentary on the side of the Mishnah there, says, in order to inculcate into us again the same idea that you think, and I think, we all think, that ethics and good midos and good conduct are things that we intuit for ourselves and that we agree upon as good ideas and good laws and good conducts and good ethics that we should create ourselves. And it's human. It's the construction of the human mind and the human intuition. It's not. It's from Hashem. Because even the midos, even the ethics and all the laws of social laws, they're also from Hashem. And that's why Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi began Pirkei Avos with Moshe Kibbutz Torah Masinai. Moshe, you know, the Moshe received the Torah from Sinai. Yeah, I know that. I get that. Yeah, you got Shabbos came from Hashem. Shatnez came from Hashem. Kashrus comes from Hashem. You know that. Yeah, Moshe Kibbutz Torah Masinai. Moshe received the Torah from Sinai. And he gave it over to Yoshua. And he gave it to the elders, etc. And you know what? He also gave these things over to, he also received these from Hashem as well. When it says, having Masunah and Medim, be deliberate in judgment at the beginning of Pirkei Avos. Be deliberate, be patient in judgment. Hamidim, Talmidim, Harbi, raised many students. These are good ideas, good lessons, good principles that every person, every educator should have. These are from Hashem as well. They're from Hashem as well. There's no difference between these laws and the laws of Shatnez and Kashrus. They're all divine. They're all divine. They're all from Sinai. They're all from Hashem. And that's the lesson. That's the lesson which we learn over here. And again, another idea. Someone asked me last week, an obvious question. So I said before that the source for Nasa V'Nishma is 24-7, Exodus 24-7. You look in the Chumash, Exodus 24-7 is the end of this parasha. So that's funny. Nasa V'Nishma is what the Jewish people uttered at Har Sinai when they said, before the Torah was given, we're ready to do, and then we'll listen afterwards. So why is Nasa V'Nishma after Parashat Mishpatim? It already took place. And in fact, the end of the parasha this week does return to the narrative of Har Sinai, which is very, very odd. Why is the narrative of the revelation at Sinai divided with Mishpatim in the middle? So the answer is the same idea, because Hashem wants to teach you and I, us, the Jewish people, that Mishpatim, the laws, social laws, civil laws, the laws which are logical, which human beings can construct for themselves, they are bookended and sandwiched between the two pillars of revelation. Not that there were two revelations, there's one revelation, but the narrative of the revelation are here as two pillars. Revelation here, revelation there, Torah's Messinai from over here, Torah's Messinai over here, and what's in the middle? Mishpatim is stuck in the middle, squashed between those two principles to teach us that Mishpatim are also Messinai as well. They're also from Hashem as well, right? Another idea. I mean, there's many examples of this. Another example, actually, end of the parasha, also talks about the Luchos, talks about the tablets which Hashem gave to Moshe. Luchos, right? Luchos, what are Luchos? Tablets, because there were two blocks of, there were two, like, two stones, two pieces. And on one of the Luchos was engraved the first five commandments, including Shabbos and belief in Hashem and idolatry and not to take God's name in vain. And the other tablet was engraved with all of the laws of not killing, not murder, not coveting, not committing adultery. And those laws are all interpersonal laws, the Bein Adam L'Chaverim, the social laws. And these laws over here are the religious laws, the divine laws, the things which you recognize to be from Hashem. But the fact that they're on two stones, equal numbers on each one, five on each, five man God, five man, teaches us again, they're a unit, they go together. And in fact, the word luchos, tablets, is a plural word. Luach is a tablet. Luach is a tablet. Plural of luach is luchos, because they're called a luchos, right? However, anytime you look in the Chumash, and see where it says the word luchos. It's always spelled without a vav at the end of the word. The word luchos is spelled lamed vav, ches vav, tof, luchos. But it never has that second vav. It doesn't have to have it in terms of pronouncing it because, you know, you can still pronounce it as luchos, but it doesn't need to say, but it doesn't have the letter vav. Typically, a plural word will have the letter vav. What's the message of that? The message is because without the vav, you could read it as a singular noun. It could be read as luchas or luchat. It could be, there's no such word, but that's how a person might read it as a singular noun. But the point is that Hashem wants to communicate to us that even though these luchos, these are two items, and there's the man-God mitzvahs on this side, the man-man mitzvahs on this side, they form a holistic unity. They form a unity of one. They're not two different things. Maybe two physical things, but they form one unified whole. And that's alluded to in the word luchos without a vav, because they form a unified whole, right? That's the end of the parasha as well. That's all part of the narrative at the end of the parasha, you know, underscoring the same idea. And another example of this is at the end of the parasha, also describe, again, going back to the narrative of the revelation at Sinai, one of the things which happened at Sinai was there was a blood offering and there was an animal sacrifice. Moshe brought a sacrifice and he sprinkled blood upon the heads of the Jewish people, as well as on top of the Mizbeach, the altar which he made at the foot of Mount Sinai. So it describes it over there. Right, there was blood. He took the blood and he sprinkled it. But the blood which he took from the sacrifice, it says he took the blood from the basin. He took half of the blood and sprinkled it on the Jewish people, and the other half of the blood he sprinkled it on top of the mizbeach. And Rashi says, quoting the Medrash, that who divided the blood? How was the blood divided? How was the blood split into two? So you say, well, Moshe just took half the blood. He took the basin of blood and poured half of it out and sprinkled half of it on the Jewish people, half of it on the Mizbeach. Medrash says, no, Moshe was not the one to split the blood into two equal portions. An angel did it. An angel came along and divided this basin of blood into two equal portions, to one part being sprinkled on the Jewish people, the other on the Mizbeach, on the altar. Why an angel? Why couldn't Moshe do it himself? The answer is because a human being is subject to error. A human being can't precisely divide a container of liquid perfectly into two, right? It's going to be, you know, a little bit off. An angel, an angelic being, a spiritual being can make a perfect split between the two. Well, who cares? I mean, as long as he gets it basically right, as long as, you know, why does it have to be so perfectly, precisely divided into two? Why does a malach have to do it? Let Moshe do it. It won't be so perfect. The answer is because the blood on the people, on the heads of the Jewish people, and the blood on the Mizbeach both represent these two sides of the same coin. The blood on the Mizbeach symbolizes religious law, right? Man, God, Mizbeach, altar, sacrifices, that symbolizes religious law. And the blood on the heads of the Jewish people, right, symbolizes the unity of the Jewish people, social law, ethics, jurisprudence, and all of the social laws of the society. So the blood on them represents the social laws, blood on the Mizbeach, the religious laws. They can't be one-sided. There can't be one side more than the other. They have to be perfectly split down the middle. They're both as equally important as each other. Both sides are 100% necessary, and there has to be a perfect split down the middle for a human being to create that split. It wouldn't be perfect. It would give an imbalance. And you know, it's interesting because how would the imbalance manifest itself? The imbalance manifests itself in terms of what you prefer, what I prefer. Some people prefer the man-God mitzvahs. Some people prefer the man-man mitzvahs. And we all pick and choose. This is the problem, the smorgasbord Judaism experience than most people do. Experience, they pick and choose what they like. You know, I like, you know, giving tzedakah. He likes Shabbos. I like Hachnasas Orchim, having guests, and you like, you know, davening. You know, we all pick and choose what we like to do, and that's not how we're supposed to be. We're supposed to be completely devoted. You know, we stumble, we make mistakes, though. Obviously, we're not perfect, but it's not about, you know, it's interesting. It's not about being perfect, but striving to be perfect. Our goal is to strive to be perfect, and we've got to know what the idea, what the true ideas are. You know, I often think about it. This popped into my head, not right now. You know, davening, Shmoneh Esrei, is so incredible. It's so powerful. And it's so a such a necessary thing for every human being to daven Shmoneh Esrei. I mean, God willing, I'm going to give a series of classes on the Amida and davening in the future. But the more I learn about the Amida, the Shmoneh Esrei, it's just absolutely, how a person can live life without the Shmoneh Esrei, I don't know. The Shmoneh Esrei is every human desire, every need, every wish, every aspiration, everything you long for is in the Shmoneh Esrei, articulated so much more eloquently and more fully than your words can even imagine to be able to construct yourself. When I say I want to, you know, I want to have health. When I say I want to do teshuva. When I say I want to become better at this. When I say I wish I had better parnasa, more parnasa. You know, we're somewhat simple in our words, and it's okay. That's fine. We're supposed to have spontaneous prayer. We're supposed to pray spontaneously to Hashem whenever we feel like doing so. But the ability to be so nuanced and so articulate and bring out every little angle and every little nuance of the need that I have, it's very hard to do that. But we have the Shmoneh Esrei does it for us. And if you pay attention to the nuances of the words of the Shmoneh Esrei and you see how it's worded, every little emotion and every need and every dimension of the need emerges from the words of the Shmoneh Esrei. So why am I saying this? It came into my mind because it relates to what I'm saying. Because the very first bakasha, the very first request we ask of HaKadosh Baruch Hu every single, three times a day, at least do it once a day, right? Once a day, say a Shmoneh Esrei. It's how to live without a Shmoneh Esrei, I don't know. Because everything comes from Hashem. You know, everything comes from the Almighty, everything comes from Hashem. So go to the one that produces it all and ask for him. Ask for those things. What's the very first thing we ask for? Clarity. Give me clarity, give me understanding, give me clarity of what to do with my life. Ata chonein l'adam das, you bestow clarity and wisdom to human beings. You are the source of wisdom. Please grant me, Hashem, clarity with what I should do with my life. Please grant me clarity of how to make decisions and what to do here and what to do there. I can't do my, we get stuck. We're not clear. So where does clarity come from? Are you expecting it to figure it out yourself? You know, good luck. Clarity comes as a gift. Clarity comes as a gift. It's a matana from Shemayim. It's a gift from heaven. Ask for it. And with clarity, we know what to do with our lives. So I'm bringing this up because this is clarity. One of the nuggets, one of the pillars of clarity is to know that life consists of two pillars. One pillar being the interpersonal obligations of ethics, etc. And the other pillar being the man-God obligations of Shabbos and Kashrus and Brachos and Tefillah and these different things. This is clarity. This is clarity. This is wisdom. This is wisdom that the Torah, Hashem's given this to us with which to live and to which to make decisions to make our lives into a better experience. So that's the. This is the. So the jewel, the kind of the jewel, the holistic and the synergy between the two sides is like the essence. It's the bedrock. It's the bedrock of what you know what life is about. What Yiddishkeit is about. I want to say a couple more things. I want to answer a little bit of a question because if you've been paying attention, then a little bit of a question may have been lingering. Because I explained that Moshe considered not explaining all the laws in detail to the Jewish people for fear of the Jewish people inserting their own logic to distort the laws and not to follow the laws, right? And he was trying to impress upon the Jewish people basically the Nasa V'Nishma principle, right? Nasa V'Nishma, let's just follow, just follow, follow, follow. That's why Rashi says that Moshe. And Hashem said to Moshe, don't do it this way. Don't teach superficially for the good reason that you have in your mind. It's a good reason, as we just explained. It's a good reason. So why in the end does Hashem tell him to go ahead and then explain all the details? Because Hashem says, don't consider teaching superficially for the good reason that we just explained. Don't do it that way. Teach it thoroughly. The answer is, says the Sfas Emes, is because once they had said Nasa v'nishma, once they did say Nasa v'nishma at Har Sinai, Hashem was saying to Moshe, that was good enough. They said it. They got the idea. The Jewish people understood the idea that they have to put observance before their mind. They understood it. Once they understood that and they uttered the words Nasa v'nishma, now you can explain them more. You can explain the details. You can give the reasons. And this is a very applicable idea. You'll find, you know, in the world of Jewish learning, in the world of Jewish classes, you'll find two categories or two types of students, two types of situations. There is one kind of situation where people are delving into the reasons, but they're incredibly straight and observant and really following the law regardless. And when they get to a roadblock of a reason they can't understand, they stop. They stop their pursuit because I can't go any further. And they move on to the next subject and they start delving into the reasons for that. And then you have you got people who are just like looking for reasons, looking for rationale, looking for rationalizations, explanations, and there's all over the place. And they're not following the law necessarily, not striving to follow the halacha. And it's like a big kind of a big the smorgasbord experience of all the analyses, personal ideas, my ideas, his ideas, her ideas, and it's all like a big mishmash of everything. The difference is whether the person, the first person had said Nasa v'nishma first. The second person never said Nasa v'nishma. When you say Nasa v'nishma, when you say, I'm in, and I'm putting my commitment first before my understanding, then you have license to now figure out. You have license now to understand and to now delve into the reasons. Because you've already declared and signed on the dotted line that ultimately, whatever reasons I'm seeking, and whatever reasons I'm looking into, I understand where those reasons lie, and I understand the role they play. I understand that's not the primary relationship to my observance. My primary relationship is the performance of the Nasa. When I say Nasa, then I can say Nishma. Then I'm allowed to then learn the reasons. But until you say that, you know, it's not so safe. It's not so safe. You got to first say, I'm ready to do. I'm ready to do. I'm ready to do. I'm committed, you know, without knowledge. And then I'll learn the reasons afterwards. So that's the answer. That's the explanation. That's the give and take. So, you know, these ideas are very, very important ideas. You know, I have in my notes over here, you know, examples of people, great people, who really epitomized and personified this balance, this perfect balance, the balanced diet of mitzvahs, the balanced diet of Jewish observance, right? The balanced diet of the mishpatim coming from Hashem, and certainly the religious laws coming from Hashem, everything coming from Hashem, and an equal level of commitment, devotion, dedication to both areas of Judaism. So one example is the Chavetz Chaim. It's interesting. The two most famous works of the Chavetz Chaim were the Laws of Lashon Hara, and also his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, on the Mishnah, on the first portion of the Shulchan Aruch. The first portion of Shulchan Aruch is all about religious law. It's about davening. It's about brachas, and it's about, you know, all religious laws in the beginning of Shulchan Aruch. He has a commentary about that. But the laws of Lashon Hara are certainly about ethics and about good midos and good conduct. So, you know, he wanted to write much more, but he passed away. You know, it's representative and illustrative that the two great works of the Chavetz Chaim both covered those two areas. He was a person of tremendous piety, of righteousness. And the two works which have come to us to the present day are this work on ethics and the work on religious law as well. But, you know, so many examples. And when I say these examples, the other examples are less illustrated, but just what I saw this morning. You know, this week, for example, it's not only the Yahrzeit of Uri's father. I don't exactly know. Well, he'll tell us. I'll unmute you in a second, not right now. But I'm not sure what date his Yahrzeit was. But this week is also the Yahrzeit of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. Yisrael Salanter, who is known as, so to speak, the founder of the Muslim movement. That's not really a right description, because Musa has always existed for many, since the beginning of Judaism. So one particular story which I just saw is that it really brings this idea very out, very, you know, very beautifully, is that we're coming to Pesach in a few in what, 6 weeks or so, right? 6 or 7 weeks from now. And one of the customs before Pesach is to go to a matzah bakery and to be part of a chabura, to be part of a group who are baking their own matzahs. You know, you can buy matzahs from the store, but many people like to bake their own matzahs and to go as a group, to go as a chabura, to go as a group, to bake their own matzahs at a matzah bakery. It's a little bit of a throwback to the group experience of bringing the Korban Pesach back in the temple times, bringing the Paschal Lamb in the Erev Pesach. So they go, and this is, you know, many people do this. Very, you know, Rabbanim do this. So there was one particular story when Rizal Salanta was with a chabura of a group baking their own matzahs. And when they go, and, you know, they're very meticulous. Part of the reason as well is because they want to make sure that the kashrus of the matzahs is really impeccable. Because when you rely upon, you know, workers and people who work in a matzah bakery and the machine matzahs, you know, there's kashrus issues. It is kosher, obviously, but, you know, this is one of the big areas that kashrus organizations have to really make sure that there's no mistakes with, because that's why a lot of people want to do it themselves. Another reason, they want to make sure that they, so you can imagine Rizal Salanta, this really hugely pious, righteous rabbi with his chevra, with his group of students and disciples who are all equally very, very pious, meticulously making sure that the water is mixed properly with the flour, and there's no, and it's thoroughly mixed, so there's no flour left behind, and the time that it's, and how long you need the dough to make sure it doesn't rise, getting into the oven. And they were like so meticulous, making sure that this mitzvah was done impeccably without a shred of doubt whatsoever. And then one of the Talmidim said to Rizal Salanta, he said, what's the most important hidra, or what's the most important thing we should be mindful when we're baking the matzahs? So he was probably expecting him to say, well, make sure that when you carry the dough to the oven, make sure there's nothing standing in your way to delay the speed with which you get the dough into the oven. Yeah, something like that. He says, make sure that you don't raise your voice at the worker, the lady who's working there, between each shift. That's the most important thing you have to think about when you're baking the matzahs over here. Now, this doesn't mean to say to take away from the halachas of the actual religious component of the baking of the matzahs, but he really hit home the point very strongly that as much as you're being careful about that, also be careful about the ethics and the midos as well towards the other individual. And, you know, it's an important idea. But yeah, but this sensitivity, the sensitivity doesn't come from intuition. The sensitivity comes from, it's all halacha. This is the halacha. This is the din. This is the halacha. Yes. Are my words causing pain? That's an issa d'oraisa too. It's an issa d'oraisa. Only financial grievance or grieving someone financially, that's the issa d'oraisa. No, there's also an issa d'oraisa. You know, we say that be careful about what you put in your mouth and be careful what comes out of your mouth. One is not more important than the other. They're both as important as each other. They're all from the Torah. They're all from Hashem. They're all the commandments. They're all the Sinai. They all emanate from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And just to end with one last simple metaphor, story of a poor man. He was an Ani. A poor individual didn't have any money, but someone gave him some money to buy himself a brand new suit. So he went to the suit store and he bought himself $1,000 suit. And he was just absolutely like just so delighted. He was never had such an expensive suit in his life. He comes to shul, right? And he's just so proud of himself wearing his beautiful suit. And he realizes people are looking at him and sniggering at him, laughing at him. And he feels really bad because this is the first time in his life he's got such a beautiful suit. So he goes over to a little group of people and why are you laughing at me? What's the matter? He says, well, you know, it's a nice suit, but look at the shoes you're wearing. Look at the shoes. You got these tattered shoes on. And, you know, your hat, your cap over there has got full of holes in it as well. You know, it's you look like a bit of a kind of misfit. There's something wrong with you. So he says, I didn't have enough money to buy a new pair of shoes or a new hat. But the picture, that picture of a beautiful, impeccable suit, but tattered shoes and a tattered hat, unfortunately, is the picture, and we have to think about this, is the picture of sometimes of ourselves, that I've got an impeccable devotion in this area, but a lousy devotion in a different area. And my mission in life is to serve Hashem holistically in a homogeneous way, equally in both areas, to look at myself, what am I putting more effort into? Am I putting more effort into my ethics and my social ideas? Am I putting more effort into my religious laws? And is there an imbalance between the two? I've got to put a balance between the two of them. They both got to be equally dedicated to in order to be a totally devoted individual. And again, it's a journey. Yeah, we can't be like that overnight, but we've got to at least, as I said in the Shemoneh Esrei, clarity to know what we're striving for. Let's lock this in. Let's lock this idea in, that both areas are equally as important as each other. I can't pick and choose which are more important than the other. Both are important, essential areas of service of Hashem. And that's what we learn from the parasha.